Sean Fitzgerald covering the Pan Am Games, the Olympic beat, and everything else for the National Post joining us. How you doing, Sean?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. And before I look ahead to 2024, just the Pan Am experience. We can get jaded as media types. And I know I've heard a lot of positives from some people in the corners, and I'm just curious what you thought of the whole thing.
Jaded media?
Yes, what? Apparently. That's what I hear, yeah.
Are you sure? Can you confirm that report for me?
I will not confirm or deny. I had it first.
Hot take.
Yeah.
These games were always, and I've said it on this station before, they were always going to unfold on two separate planes. One is the cost, the $2.57 billion, the budget that could end up going up, the fact that one former CEO got a $500,000 golden parachute and that the current CEO gets another $500,000 golden parachute. And, you can debate the legacy and the long-term usefulness of some of the facilities. And they built 10 new ones and renovated 15 others in and around Southern Ontario. So that's one. That's where we can have really heated, animated debates. The other one is the one that everybody is sort of remembering fondly now, and that's the games and the athletes. That's always going to be a lot of fun. I mean, there's not a single person in this city when you see an image of a Canadian standing at home on top of a podium, a gold medal around their neck, and their song playing in the background with the anthem. Nobody's going to go, ew. That's a huge lure. That's a huge draw. And I'm guilty of this, too. I think what a lot of people underestimated was the power of that as a drawing card for organizers that, because Canada sent its absolute best team, 715 athletes, a lot of the stars that, are going to try and make it to Rio next summer, with the stated goal of finishing top two, that Canada won a lot of medals and they won it early. And I think what we all underestimated was the draw of that to get people out, to get people talking, and to get people really engaged with the games. And what happened was, a week or two out, they'd only sold about half of the 1.2 million available tickets. A week in, they'd sold 1 million. And by the end, they're saying that they've sold even more than that. So, from on the surface, it was absolutely a success.
Well, I'd mention as well, when you look back, that from the get-go, I mean, I really enjoyed watching the Pan Am Games in 1999 in Winnipeg. I thought that was, and I thought that was kind of the scale you should have looked at. And ultimately what maybe salvaged but made these games a success is we kind of got that small town feel a little bit more versus this international event that everybody get out of town. We're going to be deluged by people traveling to see it. And it was marketed as if it was for those people. And I can't tell you how many people said, I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm not going to be around. It's going to be ridiculous. And really when people maybe even at the 11th hour got some tickets or chose to enjoy something, they were pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, you go down to the exhibition grounds and, there are some small things. It was pretty spare, but there are some things that you could sort of enjoy. And, if you brought your kids, there are things they could do. And, you go in and you happen to get tickets for two nights of artistic roller skating. When the Stellarks used to go out and hang out at the roller gardens, that's what it was.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so it's the two wheels up front, two wheels at the back, and they do the long program, the short program, the axles, everything. And you go in, and it's temporary bleachers, and it holds 2,000, 3,000 people. And it was packed. It was sold out. And it was fun to watch because it's something that you don't see a lot of at a high level around here. You don't see that really at any level other than, again, when the Stellars go out to the roller rink.
Yeah, I think it was I was at bowling that night, I think.
Were you bowling that night?
Yeah.
That's also a good time. But you go out to these things, beach volleyball, or, you go out and you're like, what's handball? So you go out and watch handball. These are all things that you don't usually get exposure to. So that is a lot of fun. And if you did happen to get down there, then, yeah, I think you definitely got your money's worth.
And you mentioned as well that it's kind of like sports now. All the analytics, analysis, stats, you name it. But it comes down to the performance on the field, and especially this when you're talking about not well-paid professional athletes, but when you saw the flag being raised and everything else, it's like we melt again and we get back to that core value.
Yeah, and again, I said this on Twitter earlier today, and God, I'm referencing myself. That's horrible. And I don't mean that. It's like I'm talking about myself in the third person, and I apologize for that.
Okay.
But not to sound like a jerk in all of this, but Canada did finish with 217 medals, 78 gold medals, both of which are records and not by a small margin. But here's the bit of context. So, you know, nobody, when Rio rolls around next summer, nobody thinks, oh my God, Canada's going to run the table in Summer Olympics. The Pan Am Games, don't forget, fall in a really awkward time of the summer sports calendar. Like the swimming world championships have already started in Russia, in Kazan. So the swimmers, like Michael Phelps wasn't here. Canada sent a pretty good swim team. Not all of the other Pan Am nations sent their best swim team. In fact, the U.S. sent, other than Natalie Coughlin, a fairly developmental-based sort of swim team. The same can be said, you know, go up and down the row of sports, you know, in athletics, you know, basketball, the U.S. sent some development sort of minded teams. So Canada sent its very, very best, and for obvious reasons that, you know, Canadians want to compete, you know, in front of their own on home soil. And also, you know, it would help, you know, people care about the Pan Am Games if Canadians were winning. But just keep that in mind when you take a look at those totals, those really impressive totals, that Canada was definitely a country that was trying to win. You can't say that about every other of the 41 Pan Am nations that were here.
Okay, we beat their taxi squads. I got it. Sean Fitzgerald joining us from the National Post and looking ahead 2024 and just, you know, whether this matters or not in people's or an official 2024 bid for Toronto, your thoughts about it and understand some cooling off on some of the other markets, especially Boston, some lukewarmness by the mayor with a targeted city that the Americans were looking at.
Yeah, I'm not anti-Olympics. I'm pro-skepticism, especially, I mean, you know, the Pan Am Games could end up costing more than $3 billion. That is still just a fraction of what the Summer Olympics would cost. So there's a deadline of September 15th for cities to sort of declare themselves as bid cities, and that's when the real money, that's when it gets real, is what the kids would say. Mm-hmm. And right now you have Paris, Rome, Budapest, as among the bid cities. Hamburg, Germany's also in there. And Boston was part of that until sort of earlier this morning when the mayor of Boston convened a press conference to say, you know, I'm leery of taking any steps further ahead until I get some guarantees that taxpayers won't be on the hook for a single penny of cost overruns that we might incur for staging these games, which is a very level-headed, pragmatic way to approach things, because this is going to cost a lot of money. There's going to be a lot at stake. So this has to be sort of navigated as a course very carefully over the next couple of weeks as you head towards September 15th. And then, you know, as each other step continues through to the awarding of the 2024 games during the IOC Congress in Lima, Peru in 2017. Should Toronto go for it? I mean, you're really going to have to break down the numbers of how the Pan Ams worked out, you know, how much did things cost, and then project out, like reasonably, realistically project out how much this is all going to cost the city of Toronto and what benefit, like what will Toronto get for this? Because it's not, it can't be about ego. It can't be, oh, it'd be really nice to host the Olympics, because the Olympics are amazing. Like, they're just fantastic to be there in person and to watch it. But what's going to be here? What is going to be the lasting tangible legacy of the Pan Am or the Olympic Games here in 2024?
Well, the execution of these games at all, do they change at all the chances of getting the Olympics awarded to Toronto if Toronto chooses to proceed?
Well, that's the interesting thing. Is you look at this and, well, Paris is well underway. There's, you know, reports of, you know, Parisians being really excited about the prospect of having an Olympics again. And other cities, their bids are already well underway. So then you look at this and you say, well, you know, Toronto City Council already said no. Like they voted no, we don't want to pursue 2024. So you look at the deadline, you're like, well, that's coming up quick. Maybe we don't have enough time for 2024. But the thing that is working in Toronto's favor is that the Pan Am Games, they're not the Olympics, but there's still a lot of logistical things you have to work through. There's still 6,000 athletes, you know, sponsors, Athletes Village, you know, structures, new builds, renovations, all of this. It's a huge undertaking. And Toronto can say, look, you know, we pulled this off. Nothing major went wrong during the Pan Am Games. There was no huge logistical nightmare. There were some small issues, shuttles that didn't show up, stranding some people, but never the athletes, which is what matters. And we can, you know, Toronto can say, we have this book. We have this. We've just done this. We can do it. And, you know, some of the other big cities can't because they haven't hosted a game like this in quite some time.
Do you have a favorite Pan Am Games memory?
Oh, man. The women's basketball, watching Tia Nurse, 19 years old, 33 points against the Americans. And, I mean, Maple Leaf Gardens at Ryerson University was, you know, a modest venue, but it got loud. And it felt like it really meant something. Again, for the women, you know, there's Olympic qualifying, some bigger tournaments, but this felt like something. This felt like you're looking at Tia Nurse, you're looking at Natalie Achonua, who went to the University of Notre Dame and is still really young, and you're like, this could be the beginning of something. This could be the beginning of a Canadian team in basketball on the international stage that is really going to be a lot of fun to watch for a long time.
And taking a look as well, just one quick one, the men's relay team, wow. The Olympics had it happen, and then this one, not one, but two protests. One they got away with, the second was upheld. It's always disappointing to lose that way, but it's also curious that I don't know why we've struggled with this in the last couple.
Maybe it's a Canadian thing. Maybe it has to do with the longitude and latitude. I don't understand.
I don't know. We don't. We are friendly Canadians, so we enter other lanes. I don't know. HOV lanes. I don't know, whatever it may have been.
Maybe it's a subconscious reaction to the HOV lane. I think we solved it.
Yeah,
anyway. We solved it here on live radio.
That was a tough one. That was the one of the Olympics and then a couple the other night. But all in all, some many positive things to look back on. And as you say, so many questions to be asked as well as far as the legacy goes. And lots of talk coming up, whether it's worth it to go after it in 2024 or not. Hey, Sean, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.